The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking to Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick about a plethora of issues, including the university community, as well as some current events issues that we're going to talk about that as well. Lines are open if you have a question or comment for Dr. Frederick at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lynn, calling from Silver Spring. Lynn, thanks for calling.
Good evening.
Hey, Lynn, how are you?
I'm calling to, first of all, congratulate Dr. Frederick for getting the hospital back on board and having a surplus of money to treat people and to help them to live a healthier life. Congratulations to you, Dr. Frederick.
Thank you.
Secondly, my comment is, or question is, will there be greater training programs for physicians in the area of nutrition? That seems to be an area where doctors in medical schools in the U.S. are not trained in the field of nutrition. And nutrition plays a role in diabetes, and now diabetes can be reversed through nutrition. So I want to know if doctors will be trained more in that area, and also in the area of customer service, consulting with patients, considering patients' preferences, et cetera, politeness, courtesy, and all of that to keep the base coming back to the hospital seeking their assistance.
Yeah,
Dr. Frederick.
That's a great question. I appreciate your question. Thanks for your comment. Around that question, I'd like to broaden the topic a little bit, if I may, in terms of responding. One of the advantages of Howard University is that we have all of the components of an interprofessional education system. So we have a College of Nursing and Allied Health, we have a pharmacy school, we have a dental school, and we have a medical school. Very unusual to have a university with all four of those components. What that allows us to do is to have more interprofessional education and training. So, for instance, in our nursing and allied health school, we have a nutritional sciences program, and we think that there are some innovative things that we can do. Training physicians more on nutrition is one aspect of it and having that interplay. But I'll give you one thing, for instance, that I think would be an innovative thing. If we can get our nutritional sciences students as part of a joint project with the district to be out in Ward 7 and 8 at the grocery stores, offering assistance to people who are going to shop and shopping with them to give them the opportunity to help them with reading labels, interpreting what this means, and then being able to give that information back to their physicians. Again, I think we meet the patients where they are in this new type of format of a population healthcare system. And that, I think, really then helps improve the health in terms of what she's looking for. I'm a surgeon myself, and there are a few things that I think about when you talk about customer service, the level of courtesy, et cetera. Physicians are extremely busy. We can't forget that the center of all of our attention in the healthcare system should be the patient. The healthcare system has to change from being doctor-centric to patient-centric. And by doing that, all of the providers then become equally important. My mom was a nurse for 50 years, and I remember when I came, when I was off to medical school, she used to tell me, you haven't seen the patient unless you spoke to the nurse, because the nurses spend far more time with the patient than you do. All of those things can help you with respect to how you interact, making you recognize that the patient is the center of your focus, and all of those are aspects of what we're trying to do within all of our health professional schools to make sure that that is something that we're providing. Because when we put pharmacists out, we want them to take the time when they're dispensing meds to also dispense advice about what they're doing and about overall healthcare. So absolutely on point, I think, from the questionnaire.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Last question about the hospital before we move on to other topics. What about the future of the hospital? You talked about that earlier today. What do you foresee, not only the future of the hospital, but the relationship between the medical school and the hospital?
Yeah, so we need to preserve a relationship between the academic enterprise of the university and the hospital into perpetuity. There's no doubt about that. We'll celebrate our 150th anniversary. The reality is the hospital predated the university by about 5 years. So we have to make sure that we continue to provide that as our clinical laboratory as well for our academic environment. However, we should not be owning and operating a hospital too far into the future. It's a complicated business. It is a business that requires a lot of capital investment outside of academia. It is a business that's fraught with a lot of change and very, very narrow margins. So it does require very acute management of it, et cetera. And that's just not something that I think a university with our focus and of our size should be doing for a hospital of that size. And if you look at the major university hospitals in this country that thrive, they all have a certain size in order to make that margin, or they're part of a bigger system. And so we need a final disposition where we can have an owner and operator that does that, and that is part of what we're working on. So this turnaround, while it is good, does not represent the finish line for us. If we're running a marathon, we've just completed probably the first four to five miles, and we have, you know, a long way to go. The ultimate destination would be to get a partner who will own and operate fully the hospital and would sign an academic affiliation agreement with us that would allow all of our health professionals to continue to train within their system.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I want to talk about current events, something that all eyes are on right now. Of course, you are aware of the shooting of Terrence Crutcher in Tulsa, Oklahoma, an unarmed black man shot by a white police officer. You know, the headline could be, "It has happened again." When this has happened in the past, and you come on this program, and you know the university has been very, very, you know, active in raising the conversation about these issues. From your perspective, you know, what more can not only Howard University do, but you know, other universities, you know, to keep this conversation in the forefront, or are we becoming world weary?
Yeah, well, you know, I think I'll probably give you some very different perspectives about this. The first thing is, on social media today, I saw something for the first time that really made me stop and take pause with respect to this issue that I hadn't seen before. And that is, someone on Facebook made the suggestion that we should no longer be sending these videos around, because to a certain extent, we are desensitizing ourselves at these murders. And I have to admit that I agree with that. It's almost as if the ability to continue to look at those images then creates a certain level of acceptance within all of us. That should never be the case. And the first one should be just as gruesome as the last one you saw. But that is not the case. And it is becoming so common that we are now participating almost in a desensitization of it occurring. So that's one thing that I think as a society I would love to see us pass. And I also think we have to turn that conversation into action. We have very active faculty members who I think have innovative ideas of how to bring community and police together and how to close the gap of the lack of understanding between the parties, and how to make sure that police officers recognize that these are human beings and they need to be treated as such and not be gunned down like animals. And I feel very strongly about that. My father was a police officer. He died when I was a month shy of my third birthday, not related to any such activity like this, but he was a Mounted Branch police officer who fell off his horse and had a head injury. Having said that, I often think, if he were alive today, during my life, how would I feel every time he went out and came back? And I have to tell you, I don't think body cameras are the answer to that. Right? Body cameras now want us to capture the shooting to make people feel that if you are videotaping the shooting, then people are less likely to perform the shooting. Well, that's not deterring the real behavior, right? It's almost like they're trying to avoid a consequence of the behavior. We've got to go way back into our police training academies. We've got to go way back into our precincts. We've got to get people in front of academics and well-trained people to explain what is acceptable and what isn't. And we have to look at some of the sociological constructs around where these police officers are living. Where are they policing? Does that make sense? If somebody drives in from the suburbs only to discharge their duties and then go back home, is that really the right construct? Do they get to know the community? Should we be trying to train officers who look like those communities and grew up in those communities and get back to a different sense? And then the last thing I would say, and I would put myself out there, we also have to look within ourselves, right? I have a police force that is armed. Mm-hmm. And I'm just not sure that's the right thing for my campus. My chief of police is willing to hear that, and he is willing to work with me on coming up with a solution for that. I can't ask my faculty and students to go out and change the world and change that system if internally I have young African-American men and women walking around a campus where people are safeguarding them and with good reason are armed. But I have to be honest with you, I'm not sure that that's the right solution. So I have to ask questions of myself first, come up with those solutions, and then see if we can go out and apply those things even more widely. But the conversation, in my opinion, needs to end. We have to have action.
That is a lot of food for thought, Dr. Frederick. Thank you for that. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking to Dr. Wayne Frederick, president of Howard University, about a great many issues concerning current events in Howard University. If you have a question or a comment, you can give us a call. Lines are definitely open. I've got a couple of minutes before the break, and I want to go into this break talking about some really fascinating news for those who are considering sending their children to Howard University, young people considering coming to the university, as well as alums. Some really good numbers have come up with the U.S. News and World Report ranking. And not just that, but several rankings. Talk to me a little bit about where Howard is now.
Yeah, sure. You know, first, I'll give you my disclaimer, because I might be back in next year talking about a drop in the rankings, and I don't want to seem like a hypocrite.
Well, let us hope not. Let us be optimistic.
No, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. But the reason I say that is because these rankings are, I have to be honest, they're difficult to get your arms around. They exclude a lot of things. We take in very bright, predominantly African-American kids whose financial circumstances are really tough. 60% of my undergrad students are Pell Grant eligible. The other schools in the city, like GW, Georgetown, and American U, they 11, 14, and 18% respectively. So, I mean, what we're doing here at Howard University is remarkable. It's not just an issue of training a certain demographic of students, but we're also doing it in a socioeconomic group that's really tough. And these rankings do not account for that. The number one reason our students don't finish is because of finances. Having said that, in the past 2 years, we've had a 10-point increase in the rankings, followed by this year an 11-point increase in the rankings. We're one of two schools in the country to go up by 11 points. It's the highest movement of any school on the national university ranking, and we're the only HBCU on the national university ranking. So it's absolutely a remarkable story. But again, it is a reflection of the faculty, staff, and students of the university committing to what we should primarily be here for, which is an excellent education. The academic environment is rigorous, and we're going to continue to, shock the world in terms of what we're going to do in terms of our academic product.
Need to take a break. More with Dr. Wayne Frederick, president of Howard University, in just a bit. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking to Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick about a great many issues concerning the university, university community, and, of course, some current events as well. Big issue, big deal coming up on the 24th, the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture opening. This is not just an American event. Some could argue a world event. What does this mean for the Howard University community? Because Howard University is such a big part of African American history here.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is obviously one of those seminal events. I mean, this is a big deal, period, not just for Howard University. I have a 12-year-old son and a 10-year-old daughter, and they have grown up seeing people in the White House who look like them. So their perspective of...
That's all they know.
That's what they know.
Yeah.
They don't recognize, probably fully or fully appreciate, that slaves helped build that White House, that that African-American president and his family are residing in. You know, so to have a window into this history that all of us can participate in, not just black and brown kids, but everyone in this country can participate and realize the part of the fabric of this massive quilt that is America that we play and how interwoven we are in all aspects is critical. I haven't seen the museum yet myself. I have quite a few friends who have had the honor of having gone to previews as recently as last night. And, the best way I could describe, I was asking one of my friends, and her response to me was, wow. And then the other part of her response, I think, puts it in perspective. Her other part of her response was, I feel so small in this larger world that we live in as a person of color. And I think that says it all. That you could walk through a museum. And there were lots of things related to Howard in there as well. So I have to tell you, I can't wait until Saturday. I've had the fortune to be invited to the opening. And it's going to be one of those moments, in the history of our country that I'll get to participate in. And I know that I'll be pretty much overwhelmed as well.
Speaking of history, the 150th anniversary of the university, the celebrations are just ahead of us. You want to talk to me a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we'll celebrate our sesquicentennial on March 2nd, 2017. That was the day of the charter of the university, and it's a special moment for us to reach 150. You know, there's some things about Howard University that I don't think people appreciate. A lot of the major universities in this country were started as seminaries or normal schools, etc. Howard University was started as a university from the very beginning. And I think that says a lot about what the founders of the university had in mind and exactly how they were going to go about fulfilling that. The first faculty of the medical school included two black men, two surgeons. So when you think of the fact that despite being in a segregated society, someone came up with this construct. First students were female at a time when women going to universities was not something that was kind of accepted in this culture. I mean, there's so many things about that founding that we have embodied and fulfilled over the 150 years that we have to celebrate. But the best way we can celebrate that is to ensure that the next 150 are just as glorious in terms of the impact that we have on this society, the impact we have on the world in general, because that's really where Howard University's impact has been. It's been on the entire world. There's no corner of the city you can go to where there's not a Howard University grad, and not just simply a grad who has slipped in to the fabric of a neighborhood or society, but a grad who's leading, who's doing great things and really making sure that the environment around them is different and is better. And I think that says a lot about, what this university means. And so celebrating this 150th is absolutely essential.
What about the enrollment that we're seeing this year? going into the sesquicentennial celebration? What are the numbers like?
Yeah, so our enrollment actually is down. We have about 9,000 students. I would say about 3 years ago, we had about 10,250. And the main reason our enrollment is down is because of the students' finances. We've really taken a hard look at this. Our applications are up 21% year over year, so we could actually be admitting more students. But what we're finding is that the financial need that students have, we can't give a lot of students a little bit. And so we've made a tough decision to actually have a smaller enrollment so that we can support the students we have more fully. Because I think what's more important is that we have a graduation rate that's reflective of who we are. Those students are strong academically, and I think it's a tragedy when they come to Howard University and they don't finish simply because of finances. So we will grow our enrollment with that model, but we want to ensure that we can give students who have the financial need that we are seeing, that we can really support them fully. And so it's going to take us a few years to be able to do that in the right way. But I also think while we're doing that, we also are going to demonstrate a very, very strong and high graduation and retention rates that we can all also be proud of.
You got a television special coming up, Rethinking High School with Soledad O'Brien. It's going to be on WHUT TV, but also WETA. What is that about?
Well, you know, I don't want to give away her complete, but I think part of this is making sure that high schools aren't having a rote, or high schoolers aren't having a rote experience. And how we provide education, the tools we use to do that, even the focus of what that education should be, you know, doing it in a more innovative fashion. And ultimately, that has to translate up into our colleges and universities as well. We have a society now, if you look at it, we've gone from an agriculture-based society in terms of the economy to an industrialized society. And now you can say that we've been in a technological type of society. The skill set, the acquisition of that skill set is a little different. And is our education system, has it become more malleable to meet that? And a lot of people would argue no. And I think that we have to make changes in order that it does do that. And so I think that discussion in terms of rethinking high school would certainly bring that up. But we, at the university level, are keeping that in the forefront of our minds as well.
Tomorrow, Donald Trump will be in Ohio making his third appearance at a black church. Hillary Clinton has also seen some drops in enthusiasm in the polls from young people in general, and some could argue some African Americans, although her numbers are really high. When it comes to this political year, you know, what is your message to students about the vote? And the reason I ask that, just this weekend, WHUR was out at Alfred Street Baptist Church talking about voter registration and getting people to put their name on the roll so that they can be ready to vote.
Yeah. The first thing is we shouldn't become cynical. There's a lot.
That's a hard one to say with this year.
Right. And there's a lot of cynicism. But the reason I say we shouldn't become cynical is this. If I came here and I sat here on the Daily Drum a decade ago, mm-hmm. and you said to me, or I said to you, listen, you know, how will I think if you look at the next three presidential cycles, it will produce a black man twice from one of the major parties, and in that third election cycle, it will produce a woman from one of the major parties. You and your audience probably would have called in and told you, don't bring me back on the show.
Right, exactly.
But that's exactly what has happened, right? Mm-hmm. That's exactly what has happened. So we can't be cynical about the changes and advances that are happening in our society. So what we must do now is to make sure that we continue to preserve those changes in spite of all that has happened in between there, right? And think about it. That happened after 9/11, mm-hmm. where people would say, you know, somebody with the name Barack Hussein Obama being elected after such an event and who it was associated with, it just would not happen. And that is not what happened. Our country was willing, despite all of the noise, to listen to somebody who described a hope, had a hopeful message and had a hopeful agenda, and to send him to the White House twice. And I think there's still a lot of that hope around. And so what we must do is to make sure that we get out there and vote. The second thing is, I don't like to hear anyone use the phrase or use the term a black vote. I don't know what that is. We are not a monolithic people, and therefore we do not vote in blocks, and people should stop treating us like we vote in blocks. I understand that 97% of people may have voted Democrat or voted for President Obama, but the reality still is, if you come into our communities and you go to each one of us, if you come on my campus and you interview each one of my students and you ask them about 10 different issues, you will get the full spectrum of political views, I can guarantee you. They may agree on a lot of things, but there are some things they don't agree on. And that discourse is what we must elevate in our country. We must get back to making sure that we're discussing the issues, discussing where we differ, and seeing where there's compromise. None of us, and I think President Obama says this best, none of us has a monopoly on the ideas. And the last thing is, when President Obama was here for commencement, I think he said it best. We should not go to the polls uneducated about what we're doing. It is just as bad as going as not going. So not going is not an option. Mm-hmm. But when you do go, we should know. We should know who the sheriff is. We should know every single person on that ballot. We should research and do something about it. It's your civic duty. There are people that lost their lives to ensure that we could participate in the process. And to not participate in the process is to disrespect their lives and what they sacrificed their lives and their time for. And so we should not participate in that as a community.
I think that's a good place for us to end right there. Dr. Wayne Frederick, president of Howard University, always a pleasure to have you here. I always learn something as well when you're here. So I really appreciate you taking the time to come in and talk to us. And I'm sure we'll be seeing you again in the coming months. And thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Tuesday, September 20th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can reach me at hfisher@whur.com, on Facebook at Harold Fisher WHUR, or Twitter at Daily Drum WHUR. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR.